Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church. I'm your host, and today I've got my shovel ready because we are really digging into some pretty dense material. We are looking at a sermon delivered by Pastor Tim Travis, and he's teaching from 2 Corinthians chapter 5.
It is great to be here. And dense is probably the perfect word for this one. This isn't exactly light reading.
No, definitely not.
Pastor Travis is tackling a concept that honestly feels, well, it feels a bit paradoxical when you first look at it. The core theme of the sermon is the constraining power of the love of Christ.
Okay, can we just pause right there for a second?
Sure.
Constraining. When I hear that word, I do not think of warm fuzzies. I think of handcuffs.
Right.
I think of, you know, being stuck in a middle seat on a budget airline. It sounds restrictive, like you're trapped.
It really does. In modern English, constraint is almost exclusively a negative thing. It implies you are being held back from doing what you actually want to do.
Exactly.
But what is fascinating here and what Pastor Travis really leans into is the specific usage of the word. He's preaching out of the King James Version. And in this context, constrain isn't about being caged up. It is about being propelled. It's a driving force.
So it's less like a jail cell and more like, I don't know, a river current.
That is a great way to think about it.
Okay.
Or a protective barrier that actively guides you down a path.
Yeah.
But before we get too far into the weeds and the definition, I want to make sure everyone knows where this material comes from.
Yeah, that's important.
We are breaking down the key insights today. But if you want the full experience, and you really should hear Pastor Travis deliver this himself, these sermons are available on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, you can just go to faithwayfbc.com and find everything right there. I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. So Pastor Travis sets this whole concept up using four C's.
I am a total sucker for alliteration. It really helps the medicine go down.
It does make it easier to remember. We've got concentration, confidence, clarity, and then that big scary one we just mentioned, constraint.
Constraint.
Right. And the flow of these points is really important. You can't actually understand the constraint part until you get the concentration part down.
So let's start right there with concentration. He opens the sermon with 2 Corinthians 5.1, and he uses this term tabernacle. Now, I know my Old Testament a little bit, but he's talking about our physical bodies here, right?
He is, yeah. The text contrasts our earthly house, which he calls this tabernacle or a tent, with a building of God that is eternal in the heavens. Just think about the physical difference between a tent and a stone building.
Well, one blows away in a stiff breeze and the other can survive a hurricane.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
A tent is flimsy. It is temporary. It dissolves. And Pastor Travis makes the point that we spend the vast majority of our lives completely obsessed with the tent.
We really do.
We decorate the tent. We patch the tent. We worry about the tent. But the reality is the tent is coming down no matter what you do.
He used a specific image here that I found, honestly, it was kind of haunting. The junkyard photo.
Oh, yeah. The rusted car. That was a powerful moment.
Describe that for the listeners, because the caption he read is what really twisted the knife for me.
So picture this old, completely rusted out chassis of a car sitting in a field somewhere. Weeds are growing right up through the floorboards.
Yay.
The paint is totally gone. It is basically just scrap metal.
Hmm.
And the caption Pastor Travis shared with the church read, "Do you realize somebody at one point in life worked tirelessly and sacrificed to have that car that now sits in the junkyard?"
Man, that is just, it's depressing.
It is depressing, but it's reality. Think about the hours of overtime, the financial stress, the saving, maybe the immense pride that person felt when they first bought it and drove it off the lot. Yeah. It was the most important thing in their world at that exact moment.
Now it's garbage.
Exactly. It's garbage. So the concentration point isn't just a generic, hey, focus on Jesus message. It is a severe warning about where we invest our energy.
So it's about value assessment.
Right. If you concentrate all your effort on things that are destined for the rust pile, your body, your car, your house, you are effectively working for a wreck. You're investing your entire life in a guaranteed loss.
Wow. Okay, but he did lighten the mood a little bit right after that with an example of how we lose our focus in relationships. The marriage progression, I laughed out loud, but I also kind of winced.
It definitely hits close to home for a lot of people.
Walk us through that timeline. How does the focus shift?
Well, he describes year one. This is the honeymoon phase. The husband is completely doting on his wife, saying, "Sugar plum, sweetie pie, let me get you some medicine. You just sit right there. I'll go to the store for you." His concentration is 100% on her well-being.
Okay, so total devotion. But then we jump to year five.
Year five, the tone changes. Now he says, What's wrong with you? You don't look well. The service is gone. Now it is just an observation.
And then the dreaded year 10.
Year 10 is, would you be quiet? I'm trying to hear my show.
From sugar plum to shut up in a decade, that is brutal.
It's funny, but it perfectly illustrates the tragedy of lost concentration. We naturally drift. And this brings up a pretty heavy theological point Pastor Travis makes about God being a jealous God.
See, that is another one of those words that trips people up. Jealous. If my friend tells me her boyfriend is jealous, my immediate response is to tell her to run.
Right. Get out of there.
Yeah, it sounds possessive and deeply insecure.
And that is exactly how we view it in human terms.
Mm.
But Pastor Travis clarifies this perfectly. God isn't jealous because he's insecure. He doesn't need our affirmation to feel good about himself. He is jealous for us.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning he knows that if we lose our concentration on him and we start chasing other gods, which could be money or hobbies or that new car that will eventually end up in the junkyard, we are going to ruin our own lives.
So his jealousy is actually a form of protection.
Right. He demands our undivided attention because he is the only thing that won't end up in the junkyard. Concentration on Christ creates a singular focus that simplifies and protects your life.
Okay, so let's say I get that. I am focusing on the eternal. But here's the problem. I still live in this tent.
You do.
I still have bills to pay. I still have stress at work. The world is a genuinely scary place right now. How does thinking about heaven actually help me with my anxiety today? Because that leads us right into his second C, which is confidence.
It does. And you are spot on. Anxiety is arguably the defining mood of our current culture. Pastor Travis talks about this age of anxiety we live in. He breaks down the word discouraged.
I loved this part. We use that word so casually all the time. Oh, I'm just feeling a bit discouraged today.
But look at the root of the word.
Yeah.
Dis means without. It literally means to be without courage. Pastor Travis argues that the opposite of confidence isn't just a little bit of doubt. It is fear. It's trepidation. It's being completely intimidated by life. And he points out that a huge number of Christians are walking around right now completely intimidated.
So where does the confidence come from then? Because usually if you're anxious, the self-help gurus tell you to just believe in yourself. Look within.
Yeah, look within. But if I look within, I just see a lot of flaws and reasons to be anxious.
Yeah.
Pastor Travis uses a great sports analogy here to explain why looking at yourself or even looking at other people is a total disaster. He references Hebrews chapter 12 and the image of running a race.
Like a track meet.
Exactly. Imagine you are sprinting down the track as fast as you can.
Yeah.
What happens if you turn your head to look at the guy running in the lane next to you?
You slow down immediately. You veer out of your lane. Or you just straight up face plant.
You trip and fall. Pastor Travis makes a really crucial point here. You cannot look at other people as your source of confidence. And he is not just talking about looking at bad people of the secular world. He means good people. Deacons, pastors, mentors in the faith.
Wait, why not? If they are living a good, solid life, shouldn't I model my confidence on them?
Because they are still human. They are still flawed. Even the absolute most faithful saint in the church is capable of letting you down. If your entire confidence is built on a person, what happens when that person inevitably makes a mistake?
Your faith crumbles.
Your faith is shattered. Pastor Travis says the only way to have stable confidence, the kind that says we are always confident, like verse 6 says, is to keep your eyes fixed entirely on the finish line. And the finish line is Jesus. He is the only variable in the universe that never changes.
Okay, so concentration leads to confidence, but now we have to turn a corner into something a little less comfortable for a lot of people. The third C is clarity, and this revolves entirely around the judgment seat.
Right, verse 10. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ.
I have to be honest with you. When I hear judgment seat, I do not feel clarity. I feel a low-level panic. I feel like I'm being pulled over by a cop, and I know for a fact my registration is expired. How is judgment supposed to be a good thing?
That is a very common, very human reaction. But Pastor Travis reframes this concept completely. He argues that judgment is actually what brings order and meaning to life. He uses an analogy of a country. Imagine a nation with no police force, no court system, no judges, and absolutely no prisons.
I mean, that's just anarchy. That's the purge.
Right. Now, would you call the citizens of that country free?
No. You'd be absolutely terrified to leave your house.
Exactly. A place without judgment isn't free. It is oppressed by evil. True liberty requires boundaries. It requires the rule of law. So the fact that there is a judgment seat means we live in a moral universe, not a chaotic, random one.
He also tied this to relationships, specifically the idea of true love.
This is a really powerful countercultural point.
Mm.
We hear all the time today, if you love me, you will let me do whatever I want. Pastor Travis says, absolutely not. True love inherently has expectations.
Like purity and faithfulness.
Right. If your spouse looked at you and said, I don't care where you sleep, I don't care who you spend your time with, just come home whenever you feel like it. Is that love?
No, that is indifference. That's a roommate who has totally checked out.
So God's judgment is actually proof of his intense care for us.
Mm.
But we do need to be very nuanced here about what exactly is being judged. Pastor Travis is very specific. The judgment seat of Christ, it's specifically for believers. This is not a trial to see if you are going to heaven or hell.
Because that part was settled at the cross, right?
Correct. For the believer, the penalty of sin has already been paid. This judgment isn't about your final destination. It is about your works. It's an evaluation of how you spent your time, your talents, and your resources after you were saved. This is where he brings in that vivid imagery of the construction materials.
The wood, hay, and stubble versus the gold, silver, and precious stones.
Yes, it's a metaphor for the quality of your life's work. Wood, hay, and stubble represent frivolous things, selfish ambition, stuff that looks really big and impressive to the world but has absolutely no density. Gold and silver represent faith, endurance, sacrifice, things done purely for God's glory. And when the fire of judgment comes,
the hay just goes poof.
Gone instantly. It burns up. But the gold remains and is purified. The clarity here is realizing that there is an accounting coming. It's not about cowering in fear of punishment. It's about transparency. It's knowing that you will sit down with your Savior one day and essentially review the tape of your life.
That definitely changes how you make decisions on a random Tuesday afternoon. You start asking, is this task hay or is this gold?
That is the clarity. It cuts right through the fog of daily life.
All right. Well, that brings us to the big one. The title of the sermon, the fourth C constraint. Verse 14 says, for the love of Christ constraineth us.
Here is where we circle all the way back to that definition from the beginning. Pastor Travis explains that to be constrained literally means something is acting against your own natural will.
Mm.
It is overpowering you.
He told a joke here about a woman describing her wedding. She said she always knew a boy would put her in a white gown to walk down the aisle, but she didn't know the gown would be a straitjacket.
A little dark humor about marriage there, but the image really works. A straitjacket restricts your movement completely. But Pastor Travis pivots to a different image to explain why this kind of restriction is actually a profound form of love. He talks about seeing a mother at the shopping mall with her young child on a leash.
Oh yeah, I really have to push back here for a second. I have seen those kids with the little backpack leashes. It always looks so humiliating, like you are literally walking a dog. How is that a positive image for a relationship with God?
It is a totally fair question. It looks incredibly restrictive from the outside looking in. But Pastor Travis describes a scenario where the kid is just wild. He is screaming, he is bolting away, he is trying to run straight out the doors and into the parking lot traffic. The mom jerks the rope. To a bystander, it looks harsh. But why is the rope there in the first place?
To keep the kid from getting flattened by a delivery truck.
It is pure safety. It is protection. Pastor Travis makes a really profound observation here. The world looks at the Bible and they see a massive list of don'ts. They see the leash and they scream, I want to be free. But look at what actually happens to people who live completely without constraint.
He mentioned officiating a funeral for a very young man.
Yes. He implies that a life lived without any divine constraints often ends in tragedy, addiction, misery, self-destruction. The constraint of Christ's love is God looking at you and saying, I love you way too much to let you destroy yourself.
So the grand paradox here is that real freedom only actually comes when you are tightly tethered to the right thing.
Exactly. If you are not constrained by Christ, you're going to be enslaved by something else. Your appetites, your ego, your addictions. We're always tethered to something.
This idea of being constrained or being securely held by Christ leads to what I think was the most visceral, intense part of the entire sermon, the visualization of the crucified life.
This part stopped me right in my tracks. We hear that phrase from Galatians all the time, I am crucified with Christ. It is a nice Christian slogan. But Pastor Travis asks us to physically visualize the actual posture of crucifixion.
I really want to spend a second on this because it is so intense. He says, think about a man hanging on a cross. His arms are spread wide open. His hands are literally nailed down to the wood.
Think about the absolute vulnerability of that position. your chest, your heart, your vital organs, they are completely, totally exposed to the world.
And here's the kicker. You cannot defend yourself.
That is the key to the whole concept.
If someone throws a punch at me right now, my hand goes up. It's pure instinct. I block, I weave, I protect my face.
But a crucified man cannot block a punch. Mm. He cannot cover his face to hide. He is completely open to, as Pastor Travis lists it, false accusations, hurt, backstabbing, and betrayal.
That sounds absolutely terrifying. Why on earth would anyone willingly sign up for that kind of vulnerability?
Because that is exactly what it means to be dead to self. This is the crucified life. Pastor Travis argues that most of our anger, our bitterness, our constant need to fight back against people, it all comes from the fact that we aren't actually dead yet. We are still actively trying to protect our fragile egos. We are still trying to block the punches.
So when someone insults us at work and we immediately snap back, hey, you can't talk to me like that.
That is the old man talking. A dead man hanging on a cross does not care if you insult him. He's dead. It is a striking image of total submission. You stop fighting for your own perceived rights, and you surrender completely to God's will for your life.
That is a brutally high standard to live by.
It is, but it is the necessary gateway to the transformation he talks about next.
Yeah.
You have to die to the old self to become the new creature he mentions in verse 17.
Regeneration. He was very, very specific about using that word. It is not just behavior modification.
No, it's not simply teaching an old dog a few new tricks. It's getting an entirely new dog. It's a genetic rewrite of the human spirit. And because we are brand new creatures, we get a new job title. Ambassadors.
I feel like we glaze over that word ambassador a lot in church settings. Oh, I'm an ambassador for Christ. It just sounds like a nice badge you wear at a Sunday school conference. But Pastor Kremis really dug into the political and diplomatic meaning of the word.
He did. Think about a real world ambassador.
Yeah.
If the United States ambassador is assigned to France, he lives in France, he eats the food, he drives on French roads, but he is absolutely not a citizen of France.
He doesn't answer to French law in the exact same way. He represents his home country's interests.
Exactly. Yep. Pastor Travis emphasizes that Christians are citizens of heaven who are temporarily deployed to earth. We aren't supposed to act like the world to reach the world. An ambassador doesn't go native. He maintains his distinct culture and values because he represents a completely different king.
So if we are blending in perfectly with the culture around us, we are actually being terrible ambassadors.
We are failing at the job, yes.
All of this, the concentration, the confidence, the terrifying clarity of the judgment seat, the constraint, the crucified life, it all hinges on one massive theological event. Pastor Travis calls it the climax of the theology. Verse 21, the great exchange.
He hath made him to be sin for us who knew no sin.
Now, Pastor Travis got very fired up here about a specific term, the impeccability of Christ.
He took a very hard stance on this. He said, if anyone ever tells you that Jesus sinned, they are lying to you. And the underlying logic is crucial to understand. If Jesus had sinned, even just once, he would have had his own moral debt to pay to God.
He would have been sitting in the junkyard right alongside the rest of us.
Exactly. We had a debt. Sin. A massive debt that we could not possibly pay. Money, gold, doing good deeds. God does not care about that currency when it comes to sin. Jesus had zero debt. So the exchange was this. God treated Jesus on the cross as if he were sin. Not just that he took a penalty, but he actually became the focal point of God's righteous wrath against sin.
He became the thing God hates so that we could become the thing God loves. He takes our zero and gives us his perfect score.
That is the beautiful exchange, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him.
When you put it like that, when you realize the sheer math of that exchange,
yes,
that is what actually creates the constraint, isn't it?
That is the engine behind all of it. Pastor Travis asks the congregation, how do I repay someone who did that for me? The answer is, you can't. The only logical, reasonable response is to be entirely constrained by that love, to wake up and say, I am not my own anymore. I was bought with a price.
It really ties the entire sermon together beautifully. You concentrate on him because he saved you. You have unwavering confidence in him because he fully paid the debt. You accept his judgment because he is the only one qualified to judge. And you accept his constraint because you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he loves you.
It creates a life that is focused, stable, clear, and perfectly guided.
So just to recap the roadmap for you one last time, we've got concentration, which is getting your eyes off the junked car. Confidence, which is looking at the finish line, not the other runners who might trip you up. Clarity, understanding that God's judgment brings healthy accountability. And constraint, the leash that keeps us from running headfirst into traffic.
And of course, that haunting, beautiful image of the crucified life.
Which brings me to the final thought I want to leave everyone with today. It is a challenge Pastor Travis threw out near the end of the message, and honestly, it has been bothering me all week. In a good way.
The altar challenge.
Yeah. We sit in church and we sing, I surrender all. We talk a big game about being crucified with Christ. But here is the question he asks. If you are truly dead to yourself, why are you still reacting so angrily when things don't go your way?
Why are we all still trying to crawl off the altar?
Exactly. It is such a vivid picture. We solemnly lay down our lives on Sunday morning, and by Tuesday morning, we are actively crawling off the altar because we didn't get the promotion we wanted, or someone cut us off in traffic, and we lost our temper.
It forces every single one of us to ask ourselves a hard question. Are we really constrained by His love? Or are we just wearing the label of a Christian?
That is definitely something to chew on for the rest of the week. I want to remind you again that this deep dive was based on a phenomenal sermon from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church. Please go to faithwayfbc.com to learn more, watch the full sermon on YouTube, or listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Hearing Pastor Travis tell the story of the junked car or the marriage progression firsthand is absolutely worth your time.
Absolutely. Hearing his delivery puts everything we just discussed into its proper, powerful context.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye, everyone.